The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices. Conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And on today's Campus Voices, we're joined by Professor Lindsay Hoffman from the University's Department of Communication and one of her students, Courtney Bollinger, who's going to be TAing for the fall semester 2016 edition of
National Agenda, Road to the Presidency.
This class, National Agenda, is so cool. I mean, it started when Ralph Begleiter was here, and you're carrying on. It's just such a cool class.
It really is. It's exciting for me, too. I mean, it's really fun. It's a lot of work. I think, you know, Courtney was in the class last semester, and that's part of the reason she's going to TA for me this fall. But it's so much fun.
Yeah, I think it was like a great opportunity. Not only like in the class did we have like a bunch of open discussions about last year's topic, race in America. And then we also like have an out of class portion where we have dinner and we get to like talk. And it's really a great like opportunity for just the students themselves in the class to bond. And I think that helped moving forward throughout the semester, like with our open communication, like in our dialogues in class.
Such a wonderful opportunity for the university community as a whole, because when you have speakers, those sessions are open to the entire community.
Yep, they're free and open to the public. And, you know, last fall, when we selected this topic about race in America, race on college campuses kind of reached a boiling point. And we saw a lot of other universities retroactively dealing with protests and all kinds of things. And I feel like what we were doing here at UD was a semester-long dialogue about race in America and on this campus. And our president and our vice provost for diversity and lots of other folks created these spaces to have these discussions. And I'm really proud that National Agenda was able to be part of that. And we had a lot of people come out to see. We had a journalist who covered the march from Selma to Montgomery 50 years ago for CBS News.
And, Bill Plant, as I recall.
Yeah. We just had an amazing selection of people. We had Black Lives Matter activists, Netta Elzey and DeRay McKesson. And DeRay McKesson, after that, went on to run for the Baltimore mayor. He did lose the primary yesterday. But, I mean, what an amazing thing that we saw him before he kind of became, you know, a national figure. And my students, like Courtney said, got to hang out with them and took selfies with them and, you know, got to just have this dialogue that you don't normally get as a student or even me as a faculty member. So I was really pleased to carry on Ralph's tradition. And I'm pleased that this year's edition will continue the tradition of kind of focus on the election and behind the scenes of the election.
Well, before we move on to the fall 2016 semester, I think the race in America, like you were saying, Lindsay, this year was just so relevant to what was going on, not just at the University of Delaware, but at colleges all across the United States. So, Courtney, I'll ask you as a student, what did you come away from that class with? I mean, besides, oh my God, I got to interact with all these celebrities.
Well, I talked about this before. One thing that I did every day before I went into that class was like make sure I had an open mind and just like wanted to hear like everyone's side of things. And like something we talked about towards the beginning of the class was how we were raised or like how we grew up. And I grew up in a predominantly white setting. I went to Catholic school like my whole life. I was just unaware of how much of an issue it is. And it was just something that I got to take away from, like, it wasn't like, okay, like, you have a test, memorize this, and take the test. It was like, we got to talk about something that's real life, and it happens every day, and, like, got to take away some real life experience from it.
And there were some difficult conversations, but for the most part, the students were really eager to have that dialogue. They just didn't know how, I think. And by the end of it, I had so many students saying, this should be a required class for every incoming student, because what we did was, you know, at the beginning of the semester, we laid out some ground rules about confidentiality, about respect, respectful dialogue, and, you know, made it feel like this is a safe space to have these conversations. And occasionally some things were said that a student might say, you know, I take offense to that, or I don't think that that's the best way to talk about it. But it was, from my perspective, always civil and respectful. And, you know, I think you're right that you sort of bond with these people over the course of that semester because you're engaged in all these relatively intimate experiences and discussions that you may have never had before. And this is kind of this first time that you're being exposed to this. So it was pretty incredible to see the transformation from the beginning of the semester to the end.
Courtney, I'm going to ask you a pointed question.
Okay.
People who've listened to Campus Voices before have heard me talk about how my friend Ivan Henderson, who's a African-American man who was raised in the St. Louis area, and myself, a person of the Caucasian persuasion raised in the St. Louis area, we had some very meaningful conversations for both of us after the Ferguson, Missouri shootings,
right,
because he was raised in Berkeley, the suburb right next door mm-hmm. to Ferguson, and I was raised in the city of St. Louis and went to an integrated church and, you know, rode integrated buses, and it was an eye-opening experience for me to have conversations with him about what was really going on. Did you have any aha moments like that yourself as you would talk with other students of color or with some of the speakers?
Well, especially when there was the when Acting President Nancy Target had the open forum on the green and the students were able to go up and speak, and some of the African-American students spoke of their experiences, and like that was news to me. And I, of course, figured like things like that had happened, but it became like much more real that day, like hearing it from them and like the things that they go through, like just going out on a Friday night that I've never experienced. And then another instance that I can think of was when Netta and Duray came, they talked about their experience of Ferguson and, you know, all the chaos that the news showed. And then they talked about like the sense of community and that there was people on the corner grilling and like that, how the media portrayed it, like from how it was from their reality. So I think that type of thing made you view, for example, specifically the Ferguson completely different.
So it sounds like what you got a sense of there was real people living in a real town, mm-hmm. no matter what their color.
Yes.
And a lot of the students who spoke at that event on the green, which was a really emotional and powerful moment, were in National Agenda. So several of the students who spoke at that event, they're leaders on campus in other capacities. So it was really great to have them as part of the class to be able to have this dialogue. But I think for me, the moment that was really powerful for me, I mean, there were many, but I think I reached a turning point at the same event. Duray McKesson, just a really powerful speaker, really compassionate and engaging person. And at the end of his talk, we have a Q&A at the end of every National Agenda talk. A white female student stood up and asked him and Netta, "What can I do? I don't know what to do as a white female student to support this movement." And he said a couple things. First was, he said, you can't just say you're part of the movement. You know, you need to walk the walk. If you're going to talk the talk, you need to walk the walk too. You need to stand with us and by us. And the second thing he said really resonated with me, and it's what drove me to continue the series and to, frankly, to continue the discussion into this year's National Agenda, which was, he said, use your privilege to disrupt the privilege. And that little moment was really powerful for me because I realized I do have certain privileges as a white person, but also as a member of the faculty, as someone who is the person in bringing these people in to talk about these issues. So I've taken that to heart, and that's been something that really is driving a lot of my decisions in terms of what kinds of speakers we want to bring in and what kinds of discussions we want to have on this campus. So outside of National Agenda, Race in America, I've been involved in, there's a faculty group that we're working on resources for faculty to bring into the classroom to increase discussions of diversity, even in courses that aren't related to race or diversity, biology courses, economics courses. So I'm working with a group that's doing that. I worked on an event recently that was about free speech and hate speech, and that clearly had a lot to do with diversity. So I feel like this campus, we have a lot of faculty who are taking that message to heart, who are saying, yes, let's use our privilege to disrupt it and make some meaningful change on this, we have to admit, historically predominantly white campus. And I think that we need to address that up front and not simply be reactive.
I'm glad you're saying that kind of thing, Lindsay, because our intern, Kayla Baptiste, is right now in a class that's looking at those very issues. Kayla, you even brought Professor Edwards down to talk with us. Tell us about the class.
So the class is called Race, Rhetoric, and Culture. It's English 413. It's a part of the old English professional writing major. For the class so far, we like talked about how rhetorical practices play into diversity and like speaking about diversity and like knowing the differences between like certain words that you use. Like, you don't want to use words that will create kind of like a uncomfortable environment. Today, actually, we talked about Audre Lorde's, one of her pieces about silence and like breaking the silence. And then that kind of like segued into a whole conversation about Beyonce's Lemonade and how Beyonce is becoming more of a public figure and actually getting out there and actually speaking about the struggles of like Black women, especially in America, and like all the backlash that she's had so far. So there, it's a lot. It gets heated sometimes. We spoke about a lot of like educational things too. Like, there was an incident recently in Wilmington with Howard University. We spoke about that. Howard High School, and how it like goes back to like urban education and how like young Black or African American students, high school students, like they don't have the same educational opportunities as most other students.
I really appreciate you bringing, if I can jump in, bringing up that class, because Professor Edwards actually came to our National Agenda class last fall. I don't know if you remember this, Courtney. She came and she asked the students, number one thing, okay, write down 10 African-American authors. And the students in the class looked at her in horror and couldn't, I don't think anyone could name 10. They barely came up with one or two. And she was just like, this is wrong. So I think that it's great that she's offering that class. And I spoke to her class last semester. Faculty who are doing things like that and creating a space for this kind of dialogue that brings in current events with, you know, history of the rhetoric surrounding race and diversity is just so important. And one of the other, I also did a film series in concert with the National Agenda Speaker Series last fall, where we showed some films surrounding issues of race. And one of the most difficult films for the students to watch was Spike Lee's Bamboozled. And it's basically a sort of a satire about recreating the minstrel show in the 21st century. And I could not believe how many of my students had no idea what a minstrel show was or what blackface was or this tradition that is really so recent in our country's past. So I think it's so important to embed these things in a historical and cultural understanding. And I'm so glad Professor Edwards is doing that and you're taking the class.
So, Courtney, did you pick up some ideas about the rhetoric of race and culture from Race in America, the National Agenda, in the fall of 2016?
Yeah, I think we definitely, like, touched on words. And, like, I'm something that we talked about was, like, the use of comedy. Like, the first day we started class, Dr. Hoffman asked us not to make a joke to try and get your point across, to just have like a serious and open conversation and not to like make light of the topic.
I'd be in trouble with Professor Hoffman repeatedly.
It was more, it's not about making a joke, because honestly, I see Bamboozled as somewhat of a comedy, and I showed another satire, Dear White People, which is very comedic but also very dark. It was more about don't make a joke to lighten the mood or to make yourself feel more comfortable. If that's the reason for making the joke, that's not getting at the heart of what's important. Let's have an actual real discussion. And in terms of language, I think that one of the things that's the discussion still happening today is this kind of dichotomy between all lives matter versus Black Lives Matter. And that's something we talked a lot about in the class, and about why saying Black Lives Matter doesn't mean that other people's lives don't matter. It's not being exclusive of them. One of our speakers, Keith Knight, who's a political cartoonist, referred to this in his talk, and he said, if I have a bumper sticker that says save the rainforests, it doesn't mean I want to reject all the other rainforests. He used some more colorful language than that. And he said, it's just the same thing. If I say Black Lives Matter, it doesn't mean that the other lives don't matter. It just means that the rainforests are really in trouble right now, and we need to pay close attention to them. So I thought that was a really kind of profound statement. So I think saying Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter is something that is really worth talking about. And I think our students are eager to talk about it, but they don't always know how or where to have that conversation.
It's actually funny you guys talked about comedy, because we talk about that a lot in our class. We were talking about SNL, because SNL has recently been like bringing light to like different issues when it comes to race, especially like with the presidential election and Trump. And so we brought up how SNL did a skit on when Beyonce came out with the song Formation, and everyone was like offended by Beyonce's like song because like they felt like it promoted an attack on police in the United States, which it didn't. I just thought it was funny because they also like made fun of the fact that like most people didn't think Beyonce was black, and it was kind of like news to like the white population that Beyonce is black. And I was just like, I was actually reading an article where it was just like, Beyonce has always been black. It's just like when you have to fit into a certain dynamic in a culture, you kind of have to like assimilate to what's acceptable in that culture. So she never stopped being black. It was just, you know, she kind of had to like put that on the back front to be accepted in the culture.
Kayla's bringing up different issues that relate to diversity, and I think that makes and you mentioned a presidential candidate, so I think that makes a good place to transition to the fall semester of National Agenda, which you're going to be focusing on the 2016 presidential race and the congressional races. And
because this issue of race, it really resonated with me, and I saw how it really engaged students in a way I haven't witnessed so palpably before. I wanted to continue the conversation into the discussion of the 2016 election. So I do have a couple speakers who, and I don't know if I'll reveal yet who it is. I want to make it a surprise. But I do have a couple speakers who will be talking somewhat to that effect, particularly how African Americans have felt about Obama's presidency and looking ahead at who the candidates are going to be and kind of the rocky relationship that Hillary Clinton has had with the African American community. So I want to make sure that continues, that stays in the discussion. But we're also going to be hosting the Delaware gubernatorial debate and the congressional debate. We are again going to have Election Central, which is on election night.
Oh, that is a blast.
It's so fun.
I've been at that a couple of times.
Yeah. Balloons, ice cream, just celebrating. For many of these students, it's the first time that they voted. And for all of them, pretty much, it's going to be the only presidential election in their undergraduate career. So it's really something to celebrate.
And the student communication majors do television reports. I mean,
yep.
I've been out with teams doing that.
And WVUD is welcome to come as well. So yeah, we have a lot of student engagement in that event. And I think because this year's election is getting so much attention even now, our students are very aware of what's going on, and they're going to be very engaged in the fall campaign. I always tell people, when I came to the University of Delaware in 2007, I read a report, I think it was the Princeton report out of Princeton, that's called University of Delaware one of those politically apathetic campuses in the nation. I think it was the fourth most politically apathetic. And coming from Ohio State, which is where I had been, every presidential candidate comes through there. Ohio is a huge battleground state. I thought, oh no, what am I getting myself into? Because I'm very politically engaged and want my students to be so as well. Over the course of the last 8 years or so, I have witnessed such an amazing transformation. I think partly it's because of what we're doing at the Center for Political Communication. We're providing opportunities. The minor that Courtney's in is the political communication minor. Students can take classes surrounding these issues, and they can feel more engaged with the election. I can't tell you how many students I talk to that say, oh, I just don't know where to go. I don't know what to read. I don't know. I feel like I need to do research, but I don't know how or where to go. And that's what I want to provide them with this speaker series, with the courses that we offer. We offer lots of courses related to this, and to help them become effective citizens so that when they leave this university, they don't just have a great education, but they also have skills for dealing with civic and political life.
Courtney, what do you think this fall semester is going to be like? I mean, what are you looking forward to in TAing for this class?
Well, I actually just ran into someone that I'm taking a class with right now, and she just told me that she signed up for the class.
Okay.
So we were talking about it, and something that she had mentioned that I hadn't thought about was that she hopes that the class isn't completely one-sided, that maybe that there will be some who are very liberal and some who are very conservative, so that will allow the class to have some really open communication and, like, good, healthy debate.
I hope there's some moderates there, too,
yeah.
So it's not just all,
one extreme to the other.
Exactly.
Well, and I certainly am not, there's no selection criteria for getting into the class, so presumably we'll get a diverse group. And honestly, that's part of my teaching philosophy from the get-go has been a respectful dialogue. So I always start my classes with kind of some ground rules for how we talk to each other. And if it ever gets into a personal attack on another student, which I have to say has rarely happened, but if it gets into a personal attack on a candidate, I say, you know what? We're not here to make fun of a candidate or to downplay what they're doing. We're here to talk about this from a political science perspective, from a communication perspective. I encourage them to step above the fray and not engage. So honestly, my students, they don't even know what I am. I've had students at the end of a semester come up to me and say, I have to know who you voted for. And I'm like, if you really need to know, you can ask me after the final exam. I think this is in 2008. Like, five students are like, as soon as the second they turn in, like, I have to know. I'm like, you know, you don't. Like, you don't really have to know. And I feel like once I take that off the table, because a lot of students have told me they get in a classroom with a very opinionated faculty member, and it can be uncomfortable sometimes because they don't want to speak against that opinion. And I don't want to create that kind of environment. I want to create truly open dialogue. So I hope that there is a variety of students there as well. And I certainly will be teaching the class in a way that we're looking at things from not just two sides, but multiple perspectives. Because there's certainly more, like you said, there's more than just liberal and conservative. There's moderate, and there's umpteen variations of libertarian and you know, socially liberal versus socially conservative. And I mean, there's a lot more than those two sides. So hopefully we'll have some really great discussions.
One of the things that Yasser Payne was talking with Kayla and me about recently was about diversity and the sense of what that means is not treating everybody who's happens to be one ethnic group or one gender or one religion the same, but looking, because that tends to happen. And I think that happens a lot with voters. I mean, I've never revealed this on the radio, but back in 1976, yes, that's how old I am, back in 1976, I was working on a political campaign where there was serious discussion about how much money to pay State Senator J.B. Jett Banks from the city of St. Louis for him to deliver votes, and was it worth the money? You know, that is treating these people not as individual voters, but as a block, controlled, and whether it's race, union, or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, in my other life, my research life, I actually do a lot of research on technology and how campaigns are using technology. And I think there's a lot that's the same as your experience, but I think there's a lot that has changed in terms of how candidates are micro-targeting different groups. So it's not just about what your race, your religion, even your age or gender. Campaigns are targeting you based on what magazines you subscribe to, what television programs you watch, who you follow on Twitter. There are so many data points that campaigns are using to target you that while there may be a larger discussion about these monolithic groups, Yasser's absolutely right. When it comes to the campaigns, they're targeting people at much more finer and finer points.
So it's like I'm from the old school pre-tech political life where, okay, you're a union member, so you're classified that way, or black, classified that way, Protestant, classified that way, and we go after you that way. But now the technology, you and Dana talked about this 4 years ago with us.
Yeah, yes. The technology has changed, and I think that because of that, campaigns are seeing that they can't treat people in these monolithic categories. But I think that the media generally will often still refer to those groups very monolithically, especially on, you know, last night we had a primary in five states. We often see, you know, who's voting for who. And this is not so much emblematic, I think, of the campaigns as it is of media coverage, that the way media tend to cover elections is what we call with a horse race frame. And that means that basically it's who's ahead, who's behind, who's winning with whom, and who likes whom. And it's an oversimplification of the process, but it's become such a standard way of reporting about elections that tends to be what we hear about. So I think just getting back to National Agenda for a moment, I think one of the great things that these students experience when they come to these talks and if they're enrolled in the class is they see behind that curtain for the first time. You know, they've only seen discussions about Black Lives Matter in the news or in something else. And maybe they're afraid to talk about it with their friends or their family, particularly if they come from a, you know, primarily white background. And what we can offer them is an experience where they can see behind those scenes and see behind the curtain and really have an in-depth conversation about it.
Courtney, what's been your experience of politics to date? I mean, is this the first presidential election you will have voted in?
Yes, I was a senior in high school when Obama was reelected, and I missed the cutoff by like 3 weeks. So yesterday was like my first primary that I.
And what's your experience so far of how you make up your own mind
Well, see, I like to believe that I'm very interested in the topic, and I still think it's, like, extremely overwhelming. Like, there's so many different, what's their opinion on foreign policy? What's their opinion on domestic? What's their opinion on taxes? And, like, I think it's hard to keep up with it, and, like, it's something I'm very interested in. I can't imagine someone who doesn't really care but still wants to vote how they would take on going through and delving through all the information. And at one point, there was, like, so many candidates to keep track of and all of that they believed in or what they, you know, their platform was. So it's a lot, but I'm very interested in it, and like I love to keep up with it as much as I can, and I'm excited for the fall.
Well, I'm going to keep pressing you.
Okay.
Because one of the most successful tactics, a lot of political pundits say, is negative advertising. How have you responded to ads you've seen that have been for or against the different candidates?
You see, it's hard to say because I feel like most of the political things that I see or hear about are not on like the TV or the commercial ads. It's more Twitter, Facebook, social media.
It's definitely changing. The ads will play a much bigger role in the general election.
I've definitely
they'll go viral.
Yeah, I've noticed them coming like as I've been watching TV lately, but definitely more commentary and opinions on Facebook and social media.
Memes and GIFs,
yes.
and those kinds of things circulate, particularly among millennials, I think, at a far greater rate than the ads do.
The only one that sticks in my mind this cycle is the bird that landed on Bernie's podium.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I mean,
there are all kinds of hashtags, Bernie Sanders, yeah. Feel the bird.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't even seen that one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think people who are engaged with the election on Twitter, this is part of what I like about and I like Courtney's enthusiasm because it can be, this is fun. Like, politics can be fun. It can be funny. You can have feel the bird and, you know, put a little bumper sticker on your car that's got Bernie's head on a bird. Like, that's fun. That's funny. And I think once students realize that it doesn't have to be this intimidating, serious affair, that they can enjoy it more and they can feel a little more relaxed about, well, I don't know all the answers to this, but that's okay. I can ask. And that's, you mentioned Dana Young earlier. That's the kind of research that she and I also do, is how humor can kind of mitigate these or sort of make people feel more comfortable in talking about issues around very difficult topics like race and like politics and like you know, we've had lots of discussions this year about transgender rights. And so these are all very difficult discussions to have. And I think they're easier to have when you feel more comfortable having them. So that's what I aim to do in my classes and in with National Agendas, is providing a comfortable space for people.
Is National Agenda full for the fall semester?
I haven't checked. The political science section is totally full. I think there's a few seats left in comm, but I've already gotten, just today, I think, 3 or 4 emails. Can I please get in? So if you can't get in the course, certainly all the events are free and open to the public. And I'd love to see a large student audience. Our speakers love seeing how engaged our students are. They often remark to me how impressed they are with how many students show up at these events. So it looks good for us, and it's great to, you know, I still have connections with some of the speakers from last year. I follow them on Twitter. So it's just been such a great experience for me. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, the class really allows for the students who are in the class to, like, see the speakers on a completely different, like, note, because they come to the classroom first and they do an off-the-record talk. So we get to really see them, like, be their true, like, laid-back self. And then we have dinner with them, and then they do their open talk to the school. So we get to see them throughout the night and really get to know them. It's an awesome opportunity.
Professor Hoffman, thank you so much for coming down to tell us about the National Agenda, past and future.
You're welcome.
And Courtney Bollinger, thank you so much for coming down, and have a great time TAing for Professor Hoffman this fall.
Thanks, I will. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.